Hello everyone and welcome to this edition of the Socially Sourced Podcast. The wonderful Fabby's here with me. Hey Fabby.
Hey Leanne, how are you doing today?
I am good, thank you. It is very dark here and it's not very late in the day. Halloween has been and gone, fireworks soon. It's dark out, right?
It is. Did you go trick-or-treating, get lots of sweets?
I did not. That would look a bit weird as a 6'3" guy patrolling the streets. Although I did hear loads of people went the full Squid Game, didn't they? Like that was like
they
the
did.
Most popular Halloween costume in the world. I think America was covered in tiny little Squid Game people.
Yeah. It has been very, very popular. Lots of celebrities kind of going for the Squid Game look. I haven't seen it. I haven't watched it. So I'm a little bit out of the loop on that. It's good.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. And I'm kind of waking up to the idea that like there might be some really cool stuff I've never seen in South Korean cinema, because I really liked as well Parasite, which won the Oscar.
Parasite.
It was the first ever foreign language film to win an Oscar. And I really, really like the kind of sense of humour and dark style to that. And Squid Game is exactly the same. So I'm starting to now think, cool. I've watched every kind of decent box set going from the West. Let's discover some South Korean good stuff. So IMDb later for me to discover new content, I think.
There you go. Well, we've got a lot to chat about on today, though, beyond Squid Game, don't we?
Beyond Squid Game. Is there anything really beyond Squid Game, Fabby? I can't do any spoilers, that's fine. Yeah, we're going to talk the ills of social media today, aren't we? We can't get away from it.
It's kind of a burning topic, isn't it? Everyone's talking about is everywhere that you turn, TV, news, wherever, everyone's talking about kind of the problem with social media, right?
Yeah, this storm has been brewing for a long time, and Francis Haugen's leaks recently have just highlighted it again. You know, is regulation inevitable? What are some of the problems it causes? We're going to try and, you know, have a dig around in some of that stuff today, because, you know, it's just becoming more and more divisive, isn't it, as every week passes?
Yeah, indeed. And as I said, everyone's got an interest in it. We're all on some sort of social media. So obviously something that will be interesting for us to unpack.
There's no escape. Let's get stuck into it.
Let's do it.
So Fabby, I am unfortunately old enough to remember Facebook launching. Obviously you're not, you know, youthful, wonderful Fabby. Absolutely not. I'd never say that about you. But I can remember Facebook launching and you know, university and people kind of moving towards the photo sharing site back in the day. It's obviously changed a whole lot since then. Most people have had a play around on Facebook. What social media are you on and do you use regularly?
I'm on everything, but currently I'm on nothing. That's the best way to explain it.
You're having a vacation.
I am having a major digital detox, and really has come as a result of us preparing to come and talk on mic about this today. It's made me realize kind of how much it was impacting me. So what I've done, Leon, and I have told you this offline, I have deleted all of my social apps from my phone. I still have my accounts from Facebook, TikTok, I'm a big TikTok fan, Pinterest and Instagram, etc. But I will access those platforms on my browser when I wanted to, rather than having them fighting for my attention on my pocket every 5 seconds. So this is kind of where I am. But technically, I'm on every single platform. I think, Pinterest, I love Pinterest, massive from day one, big fan. We use a lot of LinkedIn as well. And TikTok, the kind of new kid on the block. I haven't really been on Facebook for a couple of years now. But obviously it is the most popular social network on the planet, right? One third of people on Earth are on Facebook. What about you? What's your poison when it comes to social platforms?
So the lines get a bit blurry, don't they? I think I'd be interested to know where you stand on YouTube, because I think it kind of sometimes gets lumped into social media and sometimes kind of gets left out of the conversation. But a big consumer of content on YouTube, not so much in the comments section. So maybe I'm just maybe using it more as like a Netflix kind of media browsing thing rather than a social media platform per se. I probably use LinkedIn the most. I haven't really had a lot of time to put anything remotely thoughtful on there as a post for a while, but you know, use it to keep in touch with people I work with and talk to some people on there. So I do use that, and I'm a big consumer of a lot of content on Reddit. So there's an awful lot of good speciality content on Reddit for really focused kind of niche interests and stuff, which I find just fabulous. I think if I think about how I behave on them, I think. And we'll come on to maybe some of the negative behaviors that we see on social media. Probably only the Reddit one I would class as maybe slightly more negative from a behavioral perspective. I don't spend lots of time kind of just endlessly scrolling on LinkedIn. I go on there, you know, I'll look at a couple of people, I'll check out some very latest feeds, and we'll post things like the podcast on there. And then I'm done. You know, maybe it's 10 minutes a day, 15 minutes a day on LinkedIn. Whereas Reddit, I will dip in and out of quite regularly. You know, when the kettle's boiling, that's what I'm doing my endless scroll on. I think a lot of people fall into that trap with Instagram and platforms like that, but I'm not really on those. Reddit is my poison, as it were.
Yeah, and recently, actually, I went on Reddit as well, and I can see the appeal. As you said, it's just so easy to get lost in the conversation there. Probably, you know, the first time I went in, spent around an hour and a half, and just kind of, you know, finding amazing topics and kind of getting into conversation with different people. But again, it's just an extra platform that I wasn't in, and now I am in. Although
Now
now,
you're
as I
in.
said, I'm out of everything. But I mean, these folks, they're getting a really bad reputation. Is it just a reputational problem, or do we actually have a serious problem in our hands here when it comes to social?
Social's such a broad term, isn't it? And I think, you know, what you could get really existential, couldn't you? What is social media? But you know, certainly the big platform that most people jump to when they talk about social media is Facebook. And the real sort of upstart in the world is TikTok. Certainly when it comes to younger consumers, TikTok is just by far and away the most used platform by some distance, I think, followed by Instagram. But Facebook's the big one that has the real bad reputation. I think we've known for a while, haven't we, anecdotally, that people are struggling with a lot of similar feelings and emotions about using these platforms, and it engenders certain feelings for a lot of people around, you know, anxiety, FOMO. It can create some quite negative behaviors, can't it? I think Facebook and Instagram probably get the finger pointed at them the most for this kind of FOMO, don't they?
I think because they're the biggest, isn't it? That it ultimately comes down to size. And as I said, you know, you've got poor quality of sleep, you know, you've got anxiety. But I think the worst offender here is kind of the low self-esteem. And something that we've been seeing is so strongly when it comes to, you know, teenagers, particularly girls. And it's you know, it's huge problems, quite tangible, isn't it? And it's something that has, you know, leaked really strongly on Francis, the Facebook whistleblower, right? Those documents kind of it's a clear evidence that Facebook, it's kind of harmful to users, and it just isn't doing enough to tackle it.
There's something really poignant, isn't there, about, you know, two people. Let's call us middle-aged, Fabi, right? Two middle-aged people who now have
Excuse
had.
me.
I know you raised your glasses at me and everything. Then I got an eyebrow there, folks, when I said that. Yeah, very youthful, Fabiola, and very old and wily, Leon. You know, there's something, isn't there, interesting where we feel at our age and with some of the things that we've done in our lives. You know, both parents, both got families. You know, both achieved some stuff. If we feel like some of the content on these platforms can, you know, make us feel negative about maybe ourselves, or have caused feelings of anxiety or FOMO or some of these negative thought patterns, it must just be amplified 1,000x for a very young, impressionable person finding their way in the world without any of that actualization that's gone on in their lives yet. I can't imagine what it is like to have all of that additional pressure when you're just trying to find your way in the world, and people of that of that age are just so much more vulnerable because they don't have that tough shell, you know, that you and I have developed to protect them from some of this content and some of these feelings that they will naturally get looking at everyone's highlight reel all the time, which, let's be honest, is a bit make-believe, isn't it, ultimately?
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's, you know, there's kind of some exponential growth when we look at the numbers when it comes to depression, anxiety, mental health in teenagers. I think I was reading it today, up until around 2010, 2011, the numbers of teenagers in hospital for things like self-harm, for example, they've been pretty stable. But since the introduction of, not the introduction of social, but since we've kind of started to carry our social lives in our pockets, kind of that's kind of why you put a stamp on it. The numbers really skyrocketed. In the US, there's been some research specifically on that. And the numbers were up 62% for girls between 15 and 19 year olds, and an incredible 189% for girls aged 10 to 14. So this is kind of an increase of girls in hospital for things like self-harm. And I think the same goes for suicides, and the pattern's the same. So, I mean, Gen Z has really been the first generation in history to have social media when they entered high school. And the result is clear, isn't it? More fragile, more depressed, less confidence. It's pretty serious, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, how bleak and depressing. I'm sorry to sort of bring everyone down on the show. I mean, it's a serious problem, isn't it? And we talked on our last episode about that kind of trust complex, didn't we? About how organisations can foster trust and you know, being transparent, being open, having these conversations about these serious issues is the right way to go. You know, our good old friends at Facebook, with all these leaks from Frances Haugen, have done exactly the opposite of that. You know, they've got this data. They are able to correlate, you know, especially these kind of young women that you talk about that are extremely vulnerable. And they're able to understand how these women's behaviours are being influenced by these algorithms, and how actually their technology is amplifying and promoting some of these, you know, really extreme dieting sites to people that weigh 8 stone, you know, and algorithms are pushing this content on people. Yeah. And it's a serious concern, isn't it? And it feels like it feels like the number is up, really, on this kind of behavior. I think Frances Haugen's done a brilliant job. I think Scott Galloway said she'll get the Nobel Peace Prize this year, and it wouldn't surprise me, frankly, if she did. Well, no. He's not on the judging panel, you won't be surprised to know, but he was sort of saying, look, she'll get Person of the Year from Time Magazine and the Nobel Peace Prize next time it comes up, because ultimately her
what a hero.
Well, yeah, and the fact that she has given up that huge salary and that position to fight for what is right, and has done it in such a constructive way where journalists have actually failed. It's taken a really coherent, confident, thoughtful whistleblower to really shine a spotlight that isn't going away on this. And we'll talk about the deflection tactics about the Meta rebrand later. But, you know, they're not going to get away from this.
No, they're not.
They're not going to.
And I think, you know, for me, what a hero for her to. I watched this interview and she was saying, you know, I had to have enough. I had to have thousands and thousands of evidence, because so there would be no question that this is real. Because I think what was obvious to her working in Facebook, I mean, she used to work for Google, she has worked for Pinterest as well. But I think what was obvious to her coming into Facebook is how the business model seems to be broken, right? Because it relies on this unhealthy relationship where an algorithm knows everything that there is to know about us, and they use this knowledge, this data, to ultimately change our behavior, right? Make us buy certain things, make us say certain things, make us vote and act a certain way. So they're manipulating this community of users, us, to their own profit, to keep their real customers, the advertisers out there, happy and coming back to spend some more advertising dollars with them.
Well, look, you know, the great cliches are a cliche for a reason, aren't they? And with great power comes great responsibility. When you abdicate all of that responsibility in exchange for marketing dollars, you know, terrible things happen, and that's what you're seeing here. I mean, we've had this data externally done by, you know, great independent researchers for a long time. You know, we were prepping for the show and pulling. You're drowning in research on this topic, right? The Pew Research Center, probably one of the world's leading, most respected, you know, research centers. I did stuff 2 years ago about you know, abuse of teens online. You know, 42% of teens have experienced cyberbullying, you know, in the last 6 months when they did this survey. 42%. I mean, you know, what's that? Two in five. That's crazy. Wow. You know, one in three have experienced having false rumors spread about them online, you know, receiving unsolicited explicit images, one in four. You know, these platforms are the Wild West, you know, and while, you know, while there will be some kids misbehaving on these platforms and driving some of that behavior towards other kids, they're just not safe environments to have this unfettered access, whether it be the algorithms driving the bad behavior or the completely unchecked functionality that's being abused by other human beings. You know, there's some just terrible negative externalities coming out of these coming out of these platforms. And to your point, that generation that's just gone into school having them for the first time, they've been lab rats, Fabi, for this. They've been you know, uncontrolled lab rats. And I feel really sorry for all the parents out there, being frank, that have had to try and manage children through this time online, because it petrifies me. You know, as a father of two young kids.
So I guess, you know, maybe the big debate then that we need to have is not whether or not these social platforms amplify, you know, hate and violence and political unrest and whatever else.
I think that's a fact.
Because that's a fact. So maybe what we need to talk about, the big question is, you know, how long will these platforms continue to operate freely, completely unregulated, when we know that there's kind of this huge conflict of interest, isn't it, between what's good for the public and what's good for the company? Is there anything coming on there? Why is no one doing anything?
It's a classic example of technology and capability outstripping regulation, isn't it? And this has happened throughout history, right? You know, at the moment we look at big tech, but, you know, if you look at examples throughout the last hundreds of years, you know car manufacturers, you know, were putting new technology and lead in petrol and everything that we didn't understand, and we didn't know the impacts of things. You know, there's probably a million examples you can cite. You know, we still call it unleaded petrol, for goodness sake. Nobody knows why, but, you know, it's because of you know, abuses to systems that people didn't understand a long time ago, right? So this has happened for time immemorial, and it's just another example of that. It looks like, you know, because of the amount of lobbying dollars and the very, very forceful way that Americans represent their different rights under various amendments, they are behaving slower here than other parts of the world. You know, in the same way that the EU acted with GDPR and really took a global lead on GDPR regulation, when, you know, American very capitalist society, the lobbyists got their teeth in and slow things down. That tends to be the strategy. We won't stop this, but we can sure as hell slow it down for 10 years. You know, we can obfuscate. Whereas the EU, there's a lady called, I think it's Marion Vestager, who's head of the Competition Commission there, having a real go at big tech. GDPR regulation, again, born in the EU. But it's great to see the UK taking quite a strong lead here with regulating social media. And you've got to walk a fine line, haven't you? Because as soon as the lobbyists get a whiff of anything associated with free speech, right? I'm not talking about legitimate protesters. I'm talking about, you know, influencers and lobbyists from the tech firms. As soon as they get a whiff, they can latch onto a free speech argument where you might be suppressing free speech. You know, you're toast, aren't you? So you've got to walk a very fine line about finding something from a regulatory perspective that allows you to impose some sanctions, put some real tough penalties there. I know that a lot of people want to see somebody go to jail for this stuff. I'm not sure that will happen, but I think you've got to have some huge fines, and you do have to make some people criminally liable to make them really, you know, frankly, give a shit, excuse my French, about the consequences of some of these actions, because they're all being made fabulously wealthy from this behavior, and it's hard to wean yourself off that drug. So the UK are looking at this this online safety bill, which is clever, actually, because it looks to try and kind of thread the needle on getting in between this freedom of speech argument and all the other various legal arguments people have and counter arguments, and creates a public environment status for these social networks. And public environments are really powerful because you have certain responsibilities when you own or control a public environment in the UK. You know, you have to keep that environment safe for the users, and you have to keep it clean. And if, you know, you have a lot of very serious responsibilities there. And it looks like we're going to use this this classification in law or a slight twist on it to put the social media buckets into a new social media companies into a new bucket, and with that is going to come some serious responsibilities.
Yeah, I was reading about that as well, because apparently the is Ofcom, isn't it, the media watchdog that will kind of be in charge, let's say, of regulating the tech companies. Yeah. And as I said, they'll have the power to fine tech companies £18 million or 10% of their annual revenue, whatever is highest.
If it's £18 million, I know the answer is 10% is quite a lot higher for Facebook.
That is a lot different, that's for sure. And also senior managers of those tech companies could face those criminal charges that you have mentioned.
That's the more important.
Exactly. Because look, I know a lot of people that work at Facebook, and people are pissed off because they have been seeing this whole thing unfold internally, and you know, been calling it out for something to be done for a very long time, and it kind of has felt on deaf ears. And you know, Mark Zuckerberg ultimately is the kind of the guy who holds the final say there. He's been ignoring this. There's no other way to say it.
And there is
people are pissed off.
There's no real financial penalty which makes a difference here. You know, it all becomes a cost of doing business. You know, criminal liability is really important here. You know, I don't think somebody necessarily has to go to jail. There might be some people we'd like to see go to jail, but I don't think anybody has to go to jail. But I think the very real threat of criminal liability for senior executives over hiding information about the welfare of users, you know, that needs to become a thing of the past, right? And this information will leak. It might be a couple of years later, but it will leak. And the people that, you know, sat above it, if they don't declare this stuff, will be, you know, found and held criminally liable. I think it's a real opportunity to get some proper accountability here, because anything you find these companies is just a cost of doing business. You know, they got PR exactly. teams bigger than Ofcom's entire staff. You know what I mean? I think the two questions that leapt out at me were really, you know, can Ofcom do this as a regulator? From, you know, regulating a tech industry like this is a huge job. So I hope that Ofcom gets the resources to do this properly. They're set up to regulate, you know, telecoms companies and TV. So actually, social media is a very different beast. You know, open question. I don't know whether they have or they haven't. Have they got the resources and the organizational capability to really vet and audit these companies? Because they're slippery.
They are. I mean, it's a very good question. I did actually watch Frances Hogan. What is her name?
Hogan.
So she went and talked to the parliament, didn't she, with the committee in the parliament here in the UK. And they were asking her some, you know, obvious questions. So if you were to regulate this industry, how would you go on about it? And I think they're all trying to kind of find their feet. But you're right. When you have Mark Zuckerberg going to the US Congress and openly telling them the 94% of harmful content on Facebook is action, when actually we know only 3-5%, we talked about on the previous podcast, didn't we, is action. So he openly lied, you know, in the way that he cut the data. It's very hard because he don't have access, he don't have the knowledge, he don't really know what he's talking about. It talks about the algorithm. No one knows what's going on there, right? So you're right. It'd be hard it would be a tough job for Ofcom to be able to regulate. And
it will.
Obviously, we hope they can do.
It will, but you know, Zuckerberg knows there are no consequences to him for telling that. I call it a mistruth, if you like, call it a lie, you know, whatever. But you know, he knows there are no consequences to him. I think if he feels like he's going to get caught in that lie when he's audited by a regulator 6 months later, and that he's criminally liable for saying that, because ultimately that would have affected his share price. That's why he said that in that public forum. You know, as the CEO, if he says, oh, actually, we've got a real problem with content, well, shareholders start running away and it affects you financially too. So, you know, criminal liability is massive. I think the other thing is as well, these organizations, again, we're sticking on the Facebook topic here, but it affects them all. These organizations need to reconfigure themselves to actually be able to respond properly to this external interest. So the British MPs have been grilling a few people, haven't they? And they brought in this Antigon Davis, who is the head of safety, ironically, at Facebook, right? So they had her on interview as well as Frances Hogan, just to get the counterpoint across. And she admitted she worked for the head lobbyist at Facebook. So, I mean, from an organizational structure perspective, you've got your head of safety reporting to your top lobbyist. Is that the right organizational governance to have in place for an organization that's really serious about safety and, you know, audit and transparency? It feels exactly the opposite, and that is Facebook to a T. I don't think they're all as bad as that. There will be some degree of awful. Facebook is absolutely awful. Yeah. There'll all be somewhere on that continuum. But, you know, you've even got your head of safety reporting into your top PR lobbyist. I mean, this is a dysfunctional business. So you have to ask yourself, are they even able at the moment to behave in a way that is acceptable to Ofcom? So there's it's a two-way street, isn't it, really? You've got to look at that too.
Frances, she kind of pinpointed for me personally exactly kind of what she sees as the main issue. And as you said, it's not something that you can tweak, because it's about the fundamental way on how Facebook operates. And she talks about this change in the algorithm that Facebook introduced back in 2018 as the, let's say, the tipping point of how things really got to where we are today. Facebook introduced engagement ranking for the news feed. So basically, posts that have more likes, more shares, more comments, etc., they are the ones that get pushed up the news feed, which for you and I seems like an innocent change, right? If it wasn't for the fact that now we know that the algorithm is favoring kind of negative inflammatory content, because it seems that, unfortunately, that's the content which creates more engagement, particularly amongst these huge groups on Facebook with hundreds and thousands of people in it. Then I started to think about why it is that, you know, the majority of people on Facebook are not bad people, right? They're good people like you and I. So why is it that people are engaging with these kind of more negative pieces of content more than they would if it was kind of a content with a positive light? And I don't know, the only thing that I can think of is human nature, kind of, you know, human basic instincts of survival. When you see something negative, perhaps you want to investigate to see if there's something that is going to affect you, it's going to affect you, you know, my family, how can I protect the people that I love. This is kind of how I try to wrap my head around it. It might be the reason why that kind of content ultimately performs really, really well on Facebook, but is a vicious circle. Because apparently to Frances, this is true, not just for organic content, but for paid advertising as well. And I think that's where the big problem is. It gets really scary, because if you know how advertising is priced on Facebook, you know that the more engaging the content, the cheaper it is to promote that ad on Facebook. So when you put two and two together, you know, inflammatory content drives engagement, and then engaging content costs less to advertise. you know, you can understand why things like the latest elections on the US and in the UK have been what they've been. It's such a negative tone, something that we haven't really seen in the world, apart from, you know, countries like Brazil. It's always been like that. It's always going to be like that. But it feels like Facebook is subsidizing, polarizing content on that platform. Is that what we're saying here? Because that's mad, isn't it? And that's fundamental, that business model. So how are they going to change?
Well, it's very rotten right at the core, isn't it? You know, you're right. This is the core business model is completely screwed. And the way that they've tuned that algorithm now, it's out of control. You kind of tap into the classic human condition, don't you? That you're 8 times more likely to complain about a service when you've had a bad service as you are send a compliment in for having a positive service. And
that
sits at the core of their algorithm, right? So, you know, if something angers me or upsets me, I might put a comment on it saying, this is disgusting. You should take this down. It's awful. How can you like this stuff? And if people who like it also comment, you get twice as many comments. Whereas if something I like, I might just, you know, that's nice. And I move on. You know, I'm more apathetic towards it in some ways. So, you know, the algorithms have tapped into the fact that, you know, things that make you angry get more engagement. And therefore, guess what gets pushed and promoted and circulated around more. Yeah, it's very, very sad. So how do you think then, Fabi, you know, brand guru that you are, and why are we now looking down the barrel of a complete rebrand for this organization? Is this just deflection? You know, Facebook is now going to be part of Meta.
Totally, yeah. Is Mark Zuckerberg had to desperately do something else to call attention to it other than what everyone else is talking about. He's trying to distance, you know, itself and the business from what it is. And, you know, our Facebook would just be a part of the metaverse. Isn't it scary, though, that we are trying to deal with all these problems that have been created by this platform, by this business? And now they're saying, oh, never mind about that. We're going to create a whole new world that nobody understands. We're all going to want to live our lives in it. Don't worry. Don't need to know anything about it. We'll create it for you. We'll make it safe for you. You just come and spend all of your time there. And they think that that's going to give us any sense of things are going to be okay right now? Because that scares me to death.
He's crazy, right? And in the sense that he just doesn't see it. Like, he doesn't see it. There must be in an echo chamber. To go through this rebrand process now, I mean, all it's done, and I read quite a lot of coverage on this, but more just to test how news agencies were reporting on it. So, you know, had a look at the BBC's view of it, had a look at the New York Times view of it, had a look at the Telegraph view of it and stuff. And all of them had, you know, 2 paragraphs on the rebrand. And then they just went straight back into the context about the Francis Hogan's leaks and they're going to be mired in regulation. I mean, it just gave almost more airtime to all of the problems that they're having because it was such an obvious attempt to just distance themselves from it. And Zuckerberg himself is such a caricature now. You know, even on like British TV at 9 o'clock on ITV on a Saturday night, they're just replacing him with a picture of Kermit the Frog saying the same words. And it's uncanny. You know, it's horrendous. I definitely go check that sketch out on YouTube. But, you know, he has become a kind of a weird caricature now, like a Simpsons character or something, as this kind of like robotic sociopath leading this Skynet style empire, you know, that's really concerning. But I think that the I've got a theory on this, right? This probably a bit more than a theory, but basically Mark Zuckerberg will become the CEO of Meta is going to become the Alphabet Google style holding company Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, Oculus, all the other properties they own. Somebody who wants to sell their soul like Nick Clegg did for $100 million a year becomes the CEO of Facebook. And that's the person that's criminally liable for Facebook's behavior, not Mark Zuckerberg anymore. So basically he wants a kind of $50 million a year human meat shield to take bullets for him and go sit in front of Parliament and Congress because he's really bored of doing that. And I get that as a billionaire, that must be really tedious, you know, to have to answer all these annoying questions about the harm you're doing to the world. But that's what he's going to pay somebody $100 million a year in stock options to go do for him. But the same way that Jeff Bezos has had enough and he's hired Andy Jassy to be the CEO because he's bored of having to deal with all this riff-raff day-to-day nonsense. He wants to go fly rockets and stuff. I get that, but they want to retain control. They're the people that have created these platforms. You know, they've got to take some accountability here, but this guy's going to ride off into the sunset as the CEO of Meta, retain his control, all his voting shares, and he's going to hire somebody to come take some bullets for him as the CEO of Facebook. And when the British Parliament calls, when they violate these rules, it'll be, oh, just go talk to the CEO of Facebook, you know, in the same way that Alphabet do with Google. You know, you'll need to speak to the CEO of YouTube about that.
That's precisely what's going to happen. And I don't know whose Facebook branding agency is, but my goodness, what a bad timing to do this rebrand altogether. Who the hell approved this? Seriously, I mean, I don't know. As I said, it perhaps it did more harm than good. Even if you have to wait a bit and do it after the storm has passed. It doesn't.
He's more like Donald Trump than you think he is, in the sense that he doesn't see this stuff. It's just inconvenience and noise, and he truly believes in this kind of mission, and that the mission will get cut through. And I think that they're just kind of surprised when they're like, oh wow, I just didn't really see that coming. I just didn't think that had happened.
Yeah,
you know what? Exactly. I thought Meta was great.
By the way, we all knew that the name was going to be Meta. Right?
Yeah,
we knew it. Come on.
I thought it was going to be Skynet, actually, but yeah, all right, fine. It's going to be Meta.
We all knew it was going to be Meta, so it's a bit like... And Donald Trump, by the way, did you see that he's starting his own social network?
Goodness. I think we're angry enough at social media without Donald having his own gaff. Good Lord.
We don't need that shit.
No, Jesus. We don't want that. I don't want that. Got enough to fix on our plate before Donald gets hold of something. Oh, God. Oh God, Fabi, we better go talk about some news and some recommendations before I get too angry and can't continue anymore. Let's take a break from the sponsors then, and we'll come back with some news, yeah?
Sounds good, let's do it.
Today's episode is brought to you by Ben Creative. Creating deep connections with customers is more important than ever, especially when you have a female audience who greatly value authenticity. That's where we come in. Here at bemcreative.com, we've connected talented female creatives with brands who want to have positive and meaningful relationships with their customers. Join us today, and together, let's build a more balanced world.
Today's episode is brought to you by RocketSpark. Creating a beautiful site is fast and easy with the RocketSpark website builder. And with their world-class customer support, there's always someone on hand to help you make every website a success story. Start a free trial today at rocketspark.com.
Right, news of the week then. So I guess the big news this week is we've kicked off the United Nations Climate Change Conference, or COP26, which is happening in Glasgow until the 12th of November, I think. And this is, of course, the third meeting since the Paris Accord was signed, isn't it? The conference has more than, 130 heads of states, but unfortunately no sign of putting Xi Jinping or Brazil's president Jair Bolsonaro there. I mean, they didn't make an appearance, huh?
Yeah, I'm not surprised by Ping not being there, because he hasn't really left China since COVID kicked off, actually. I wonder if he might have some underlying health concerns, actually. So he hasn't really been seen outside China since all that kicked off. Not that I'd ever be admitted to via the kind of Chinese state press, but I think they are sending some serious trade delegation people there. But you're right, yeah, Russia, very conspicuous by their absence and a massive contributor to it. As you said before, Fabi, is this the last chance to save the world? Greta's in town, she thinks so.
That's what we've been saying, right? Look, some people are going to say, without those guys in the table, what is the point? But of course, we need to do what we can, because yeah, people are saying this is kind of the last chance to save the planet, which is a little bit scary. But I think there was a couple of things that they needed to agree in order to, you know, avoid the doomsday scenario, isn't it? Number one is the kind of 100 billion, which was promised, I think, 11 years ago and never made it to any kind of emerging countries to help them deal with their emissions. That was really, really important. And I think that it still hasn't arrived, and it doesn't look like it's going to arrive anytime soon because of COVID, right? No one's got money at the moment. But more important for me is kind of the detail of how the Paris Accord will be written into law. Right? Without that, it's all promises, it's all blah. I actually think that, you know, measuring success will be quite hard because there won't be anything. There'll be lots of different initiatives and activity and lots going on and promises.
Yeah, who's
going to
mark the homework? Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But how are we going to measure all this? How are we going to hold people accountable?
Well, this, as you say, there's certainly some big statements, and everyone wants to kind of make these grand statements. I watched Prime Minister Modi, India's PM, yesterday, because they were kind of doing their big announcements over their five sort of main pillars of their climate agreement. And I think the world was a bit underwhelmed by India yesterday. I think that it was quite a good starting point, but they basically, in effect, committed to getting to net zero by 2070, which is, you know, the best part of 50 years away, and the rest of the everyone's chomping at the bit to try and get to 2050. China have said they'll do 2060 as part of climate agreements for net zero. It feels like with all things, you probably need to put a very clear marker down, and then we need to lobby extensively to get these guys to move faster and quicker as we all make progress and some economies of scale kick in. And maybe it is a question of more funding and more money. You know, what's it going to cost to take 10 years off that for India? My thoughts are a lot. They've still got a lot of people in poverty, you know, with some very, very low living standards. And, you know, it's all well and good us talking about generating loads of electricity by hydroelectric, solar and wind in the UK, but actually we don't have half a billion people earning $5,000 a year or less, do we? You know, it's first world problem stuff, literally.
Yeah, exactly. It's tougher for kind of emerging countries for sure. But I think what from what I understand, what we're trying to do is agree some measures, isn't it, that will keep the Earth's temperature rising no higher than 1.5 degrees. That's the goal, I think, right?
Yep.
But the problem is, to do that, we would need emissions to be reduced by 45% by 2030 from what 2010 levels were. And then countries would need to really reach that net zero by 2050. So, you know, when we start talking about 2070, I just don't see how it would work. It's miles away. And that if we continue on the path that we are now, the emissions, they're actually, globally, obviously, they're actually going to increase by 16% by 2030 if nothing gets done. So it's tough. And then without money, Leon, because of COVID.
Yeah. And it is some of the, you know, it sounds terribly condescending to say developing nations, doesn't it? Because every nation's a developing nation and has been one in their history. But
they call themselves developing nations, though. Yeah, they, like we in Brazil, we call ourselves India, whereabouts developing nations, because we're not developing.
I don't know if it is technically an economic term as well, whether there's like certain conditions associated with being a developing nation or whatever. Maybe
it could be,
but.
Yeah.
If you look at the biggest emitters in the world, you know, India with this 2070 target, the concern there is they're the fourth biggest emitter in the world. So, and the numbers don't make any sense at this level, but, you know, they put out 2,500 megatons of carbon every year. But actually, when you look at it as on a per capita basis, they're a fraction of what some of these other very developed states put out. So they put out 1.9 tons per head per year, right? Well, compare that to China, okay, the world's biggest CO2 producer, 11.5 1,000 megatons. So what's that, five times what India produce? And they're producing about 8.1 tons per head. So what's that, four times more per person than India? Yeah. So while India are a really big polluter, you know, per head, actually, they're a drop in the ocean. I mean, the US, 15.5 tons per head compared to India's 1.9. 2.5 times the EU, the US, 6.5 tons per head. I mean, the US really, they really are. And you've still got in the US an awful lot of climate change deniers, an awful lot of quiet, they're quiet now, but an awful lot of lobbyists working very, very hard on government. There's still a lot of oil subsidies going out there, a lot of coal subsidies. And this is going to be, it feels like for the US, it's going to be really difficult actually to kind of have the cultural change they need to change with these big industrialists still very powerful and very noisy in that country. Going to be a very fascinating sort of 10 years to watch how they make progress with these targets, actually.
Yeah, well, it's just the beginning of COP26, isn't it? It's only kind of a day and a bit. So let's see how it goes. I'll most definitely be watching intently to see what kind of promises and actions, more than anything, are going to be coming out of this.
It's great how it's dominating the news cycle as well. That's what we need. It's ultimately awareness. It needs to be just become part of everyday conversation. That's how change happens, right? It's through education and awareness. And you can't go on a news website or watch any length of TV news without having loads of coverage here. And that is part of the objectives. I really hope it's getting the same coverage in all these other countries as well. It is a truly global event. So I really hope it is getting the airtime. And it seems like all of these really big nations, with the exception of Russia, are really kind of respecting it as well. Whether or not their targets are where we'd like them to be, they've certainly sent their, you know, prime ministers and top people to show kind of respect to the program, and that's a very important symbol as well. So fingers crossed, some real change.
Go Glasgow.
Go Glasgow.
Go Greta. Yeah, the world is watching.
She's still kicking ass outside, isn't she, Greta? I saw her in the crowd. She's not gone posh, has she? She's not, you know, eating from the posh seats inside the convention centre. She's out there, sleeves rolled up with a megaphone saying, not good enough. Go, Greta.
Bless her. Yeah, definitely. We need more Gretas in the world. Right, so let's get into our resources recommendations of the week then. So my tool this week is a digital detox app called Cleverest. It's free to download from the App Store, and it basically helps you to take a break from your phone as a whole. And it does so in a kind of very playful way. You can kind of select focus categories and put aside time to work or relax or socialize offline, of course, Leon, before you say anything. But the app is available in English plus 8 other languages, so really there's no excuse for anyone. Now for you, Leon, I would like to propose something a little bit bigger as a challenge. And of course, any of our listeners...
Gone off script here. I'm worried.
I totally have gone off script. So if any of our listeners fans doing it, absolutely let's go. But I've talked about it, I've done it. So I would like to put it forward to see if you can delete all of your social media apps from your phone and get off social for a week and just see
even
how
Reddit.
You feel. Everything.
Even Reddit.
Everything.
I could do them all, but even Reddit. Oh, this
Everything.
Is terrible. What an awful
now,
idea.
Look, if it's not for you, go back, you know, but go back knowing that you need these things to survive. A week, buddy. Oh. You can do this, right?
Really?
You can still have all of our social accounts. You can see, you know, they're still all there, but you can access them through your browser, but just delete them from your phone. And then let's do that as an experiment. How do you feel?
Does it mean I've really got to speak to my kids and my family and stuff? I've got to really engage with them.
That will give you maybe a little bit more time to be a little bit more present.
Bloody awful.
Look, listen up. If you can say, hand on your heart, that you can control yourself or control the urge to go and check out that notification as soon as it arrives, if you can honestly say that you haven't been feeling a little bit more anxious lately without obvious reasons, and if you can tell me that your phone isn't the first thing that you pick up when you wake up in the morning, I'll let you off the hook.
The first thing I pick up when I wake up in the morning is my glasses to check my
second
phone.
No. To check your phone.
I think I'm taking the mic, but I think a digital detox is no bad thing. And I'd like to try it, actually. I'd like to try it. I'm not going to commit to it on air because I don't want to let anybody down or you down, but I will give it some thought. So what's the app called?
The app is actually called Cleverest. So yeah, download it. It's free from the App Store. It's a good app to try. If anyone else needs any more convincing, Jerome Lanier, he wrote a really good book called The 10 Arguments for Deleting Your Social Media Accounts Right Now. So I highly recommend that to have the book, have the app, have a think about it, and let me know where we go from here.
Get empowered. Okay. Well, that is a good challenge. I'm already anxious about the challenge, which probably tells me that I've got a problem in the first place. So, podcast recommendation from me, Fabi, this week. I had a long drive home from London at the weekend this weekend. I didn't come and visit you, sorry, I didn't even tell you I was there, so don't take offence at that. But on the way home, I had a bit of time on my hands because the weather was rubbish and the drive took ages, so I listened to Land of the Giants, which is by Peter Kafka, who's part of the kind of Recode group of shows who do loads of fantastic podcasts and really good online content. But it's a series, almost like a box set, and I've done a number of these box sets about the major tech giants. And this particular part of the series was about Apple. And obviously there's an awful lot of folklore about Apple with the whole Steve Jobs hero, who's kind of the original founder, really, him and Gates. They're the same age and they really grew these huge businesses, and Jobs's story with getting kicked out of Apple and returning to be the Messiah is a pretty amazing one. So it covers all that, but it also covers a lot less transparent era of Tim Cook. He's a very secretive guy, kind of the opposite to Jobs. He's a supply chain and operations guy. You don't know a lot about what goes on in Tim Cook's brain. He keeps his cards close to his chest, and there's some absolutely brilliant insight about how the organization's changed and refocused itself post Jobs, and how they've really now centered themselves entirely around the iPhone. I mean, they're an iPhone company. They don't really do anything else other than make iPhones, accessories for iPhones, and products that work for iPhone. They sell 30% of the phones in the world, but hoover up 90% of the profit in the industry. It's an incredible business. So I think it's 6 or 8 parts. They're really well done, well edited, subject matter experts on every single one. They go into the supply chain in China, some of the human rights issues there, some of the grey areas. Good. It's a brilliant box set for anybody to binge if they want to. So Land of the Giants, I picked it up on Spotify, but I think it's everywhere you can shake a stick at. And Peter Kafka's the kind of host and narrator. So check that one out.
Cool. Sounds great. I will definitely going to put that on my podcast list. I've been listening to quite a few of them. Good chat. Thank you.
So, Fabi, that's your lot. Time's up.
That's us. Time to go. Yeah, that's us. Time to go. Facebook, social media goes around and round. And here we are.
I'm going to go and put like a paper bag over my head, do some breathing exercises, just find my center again after getting all fired up about Mark Skynet Zuckerberg. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, no, but I mean, it has been a kind of an interesting debate. I mean, we have found a lot about what goes on, what's kind of behind the troubles with Facebook, and to be fair, with the majority of social platforms out there. So as a parent and as an individual, I think it's really important for us to have time to discuss these things. And hopefully we have planted a good seed on people's head there to be aware of the potential harm that it might be doing to themselves or to their children.
I think my spirit animal Scott Galloway sums it up best when he said, would I rather give my kids a bottle of Jack Daniels and a pound of marijuana or a mobile phone with Facebook on completely uncontrolled give me the booze and the weed all day. I think, you know, when you are that worried about the harm that, you know, these platforms can do to kids, that you're sort of choosing drugs and booze over them, you know, you've got a problem, haven't you? So yeah, fingers crossed we get some really serious regulation to support young vulnerable people soon, because the harm is obvious for all to see. So not going to get fired up about it again, Fabi. I need to be calm now. but yeah, you can tell it's something we're both really passionate about, and it has so much power for good. That's what's so frustrating, yet it does so much harm. So I would love to see real change so that good can come out.
Indeed, same. We need to kind of, you know, stop chasing this ideological perfectionism that we see on social, and we need to focus on connections. I think real connections, you know, that's the most important thing.
So, yeah, yeah. Indeed. Time to wrap up the show and go work on some of those connections, eh?
Let's do it. Thank
you. Awesome. See you next time.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Bye, guys.